Welcome to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services, a show about coping with getting older ourselves and dealing with our aging parents. If you have questions about how to cope with these stresses, call Scott at 877-960-9960. Now, here's Scott.
Welcome, everybody. Another edition of Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. I'm thrilled that you're with us tonight. If you're a regular listener, thanks for being back. If you have just tripped over us, tonight's your lucky night because we have an unbelievable show. If you're listening on 95.9 in the Palm Beaches, be careful on 95 of the Turnpike. Of course, if you're listening on 106.9 up on the Treasure Coast, same applies to you. Most of our regular listeners know of my commitment to bringing forth helpful and useful information on Alzheimer's disease and related dementias. It's an important subject, and it's near and dear to my heart. Tonight's show is another step in providing you truly, and I mean that sincerely, world-class information on Alzheimer's and dementia with my guest, Dr. James Galvin of Florida Atlantic University. Dr. Galvin's list of accomplishments is long and his expertise respected around the world. When I say tonight's show is a don't miss this one. It's very, very important. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Dr. Galvin in just a second. But first, I always tell everybody about upcoming support groups. There's a Parkinson's support group at Physical, F-Y-Z-I-C-A-L, Physical Therapy location in Lake Worth. It's this Friday, the 1st, from 12:30 to 2. If you're a family member dealing with a loved one with Parkinson's, or if you yourself are, this support group may be for you. And if you've never been to a support group, it is well worth your time. I want to take a minute and I want to thank the Independent Learning in Retirement community in Boca Raton for asking me to speak last week. I actually spoke about my around-the-world cruise. I never had so much fun talking about anything as I did that day. It was great, so I want to thank them. I also want to thank Abby Del Rey for asking me to come for a book signing and to talk about things that we talk about on the show. It was great. I also want to remind everybody, but this Wednesday, October 30th, this Wednesday at 9 o'clock, the program begins, 10:15, the movie, When All That's Left Is Love. It's a free showing. It's at the Movies of Del Rey. This is an extremely powerful movie. On point. In fact, my guest and I are both going to be there. It's an extremely important, powerful movie. It's free. There'll be discussion afterwards. There may even be a birthday cake for somebody that I know pretty well. That'd be me. Be my 70th birthday. So I encourage you to come When All That's Left Is Love this Wednesday. But now to my guest, Dr. James Galvin is a professor of integrated medicine at the Charles E. Schmitz College of Medicine at Florida Atlantic University. He is founding director of the Comprehensive Center for Brain Health. A board-certified neurologist, Dr. Galvin has authored over 200 scientific publications, 25 book chapters, and 3 textbooks on healthy brain aging, cognitive health, memory loss, Alzheimer's disease, Lewy body dementia, and related disorders. Dr. Galvin created and leads the Clinical Translational Research Unit, a 7,800-square-foot state-of-the-art research space specifically designed and to conduct clinical trials, longitudinal studies, and patient-oriented research projects. Dr. Galvin's research has been funded by the National Institutes of Health, Centers for Disease Control, the Florida Department of Health, and numerous private and family foundations. We're going to tell you how you can find out more information before the show. But Dr. Galvin, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So, you know, one of the things that I get asked all the time, or I get told all the time, is my husband doesn't have Alzheimer's disease. He has dementia. He doesn't have Alzheimer's. What is Alzheimer's disease? Let's clear this up for people. What is Alzheimer's disease, and then consequently related dementias?
Sure. So Alzheimer's disease is the most common cause of dementia. So if you think about the word dementia, it's really just a general term. It's describing a problem. So it describes a person who has a change in their memory and other thinking functions that interferes with their everyday activities. So there are over 150 different causes of dementia. So you can think about dementia similar to the way you use the word car, right? So car is a general term that describes a vehicle that gets back and forth, and most of them use gas. But there are hundreds and hundreds of different types of cars. Well, there are hundreds and hundreds of different types of dementia, with Alzheimer's being the most common cause.
And dementia in and of itself, it is not a diagnosis, right? It, as you said, it could represent any number of things.
Yeah, dementia is not a diagnosis. It's a syndrome, which means it's a collection of symptoms, and it's up to the healthcare provider to figure out what's causing those symptoms, because every cause of dementia will have a different approach to how we're going to manage it.
And depending upon the answer, there are treatments, right? I mean, there are, not necessarily for Alzheimer's, and we're going to talk about the latest in treatment options for Alzheimer's disease as the show unfolds, but there are other things that cause dementia symptoms that, if properly diagnosed, can be reversed or can be dealt with. Is that accurate?
Well, we can deal with all the different symptoms of dementia regardless of the cause of it. But there are some causes of memory problems that the treatments are much more effective than for others. So, for example, we could talk about these things later. If someone has memory problems due to depression that's not diagnosed, an antidepressant can reverse those symptoms.
Right.
Whereas a person has Alzheimer's disease, we can help slow down the progression of symptoms, but we can't reverse them.
Right.
So it depends on the cause.
Many people are confused by normal aging versus Alzheimer's. I never walk into an audience of seniors where I ask the question, who has woke up or walked into a room and forgotten why you walked in, or who has misplaced something, or who has been worried that they have Alzheimer's disease? I know this is a big subject, probably not enough time to talk only about this. But there are differences in normal aging and Alzheimer's and related dementia, are there not?
Well, absolutely. So first of all, if you take home nothing else from what we talk about, memory loss is not part of the aging process. People do not become forgetful because they become older. You do think slower as you get older. So it takes you longer to remember things. It takes you longer to remember what you had for breakfast. It takes you longer to remember that person's name. It takes you longer to balance your checkbook, if anybody still does that. But what age does not do is make you forgetful. Disease makes you forgetful, and it's so important to figure out what the cause of that forgetfulness is.
So you just saved my marriage. You don't realize that, because I'm one of those people. I have always had a terrible lack of memory of names my entire life, going back. It is infinitely worse today. I know I don't have a memory problem, but I simply struggle with names, and it's. She gets so upset at me sometimes, but it's terrible. So you just saved my marriage. Yeah. You told me I don't have Alzheimer's.
If you've always been bad at something, being bad at something is not a problem.
Right.
Right? It may annoy people.
Right.
And your wife's nodding her head in agreement. But it's not necessarily a problem. And things like names or proper nouns, relatively speaking, are not very important to the brain. They're important to your social engagement. But it's... Some people have very good skills. They tend to become things like politicians, and other people, you know, don't have good skills.
It's funny you should say that. I was very politically – I was involved in a very political circle at one time, and I got to know Chuck Schumer pretty well, Senator Schumer, and also Alphonse D'Amato, both of them from Long Island. And what always struck me about them is they had a remarkable memory for names. They remember when they met you and where they met you. That's really interesting. So when should people start to take what we think of as normal aging, or I forgot what I walked into the room for? When do we take those more seriously? And then when we take those more seriously, what should we do about that?
Right. So, again, may take you longer to do things, but if it comes back to you and you're able to function and do your everyday activities, it's not really a concern. It's when it doesn't come back to you and it somehow is interfering or changing the way you're able to do your everyday activities. So again, I said, you know, it takes longer to balance your checkbook. But if you can't balance your checkbook any longer, that's a problem, right? It takes you longer to remember someone, a conversation that you had. But if you truly don't remember ever having the conversation, that's a problem. It takes you longer to remember your schedule for the day. And you don't use a smartphone or anything. You try to remember it. It takes it longer to come back to you, but you go to your appointments. If you don't remember that you had any appointments, that's a problem. So really, it's when it begins to interfere with your ability to do your everyday functioning that then we need to evaluate that. And that's when I encourage people to get a medical evaluation.
And does it start with a medical evaluation? Does it start with a cognitive assessment? And not to lump it all together, we talked about 150 different causes of perhaps memory loss. What's the process look like in determining whether, one, I have a problem, and if I have a problem, which one?
Right. So I tell everybody the first step is to talk to your primary care doctor because they know you best. You have a long-standing relationship with them for the most part, and they've seen you. So if you're noticing something, or more importantly, if someone who knows you well is noticing something, so your wife, your spouse, your adult child is noticing a change, then getting that regular medical evaluation is important because there are 150 or more causes. So while a lot of them are Alzheimer's disease, not all of them are. So untreated and undiagnosed diabetes can affect memory. Strokes can affect memory. Vitamin deficiencies can affect memory. Thyroid disease can affect memory. And the treatment for those are entirely different than what we would do for someone who has Alzheimer's disease. So starting with a medical evaluation by your primary care doctor is always the best first step. From that point on, then depending on what the findings are and what resources are available to you is what the next step would be. If you live in a metropolitan area, seeing a neurologist is fairly easy. If you live in a very rural area, it might be more difficult to see a neurologist. So you'd have to play it by ear based on where you're living.
And when I come through the neurologist and I say my primary care physician believes that I need to see Dr. Galvin, what is Dr. Galvin going to do to help me figure out what it is that's going on with me? Because the conversation, and I don't mean to jump around there, the conversation always comes, do I even want to know, right? I mean, I don't want to know. Don't tell me. I'm too afraid of that terrible diagnosis, when in fact it may not be that terrible diagnosis.
Well, whether it is that terrible diagnosis or not, pretending that it doesn't exist doesn't make it go away,
right?
And in order to address it, we have to find out what it is and then come up with a plan to deal with it. So while it can be frightening, we know from what happened in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s with cancers, we used to think, well, don't tell the person and you know, they don't want to know. But the fact is that people do want to know what's wrong with them, and it allows you to develop a plan. And if you have a plan, then you have action that can be taken. So I think it's critically important. So the way we do it at my center, which is maybe a little bit different than are done in some other places because I use a team-based approach, but, you know, we interview a family member or a person who knows the patient well. So it could be an adult child, it could be a spouse, it could be a best friend, a lifelong best friend, and we interview them separately so the patient's not there, so they can tell us what they've noticed about the patient's memory and thinking abilities in their everyday functioning. The patient does some pencil and paper tests so we can assess their memory. We do a physical exam and a neurologic exam looking for signs of diseases that might tell us that it's something other than Alzheimer's disease. So we look for signs of stroke or signs of Parkinson's disease or other types of neurological diseases. We do a physical evaluation looking for their walking, their balance, their risk of falling, how well they can physically carry out their everyday activities. And then we come back together and we use all of that information to try to establish a working diagnosis, right? So that gives us the first step, and the first part of every journey is the first step, right? So that's that first step where we can say, okay, here's what we think is going on, and here's what we're going to do about it. So that might be getting some additional testing, like an MRI, a brain scan. That might be starting a medication. That might be physical therapy. That might be psychotherapy if it's depression or some other type of emotional issue that we have to deal with. Or it could be all of the above. So it allows us to very much personalize the plan and come up with a way of helping that person, again, be the best person they can be.
So the word depression has come up a number of times, and depression is somewhat epidemic in the senior population. I mean, you've mentioned it twice. I've mentioned it once or twice. What role does depression play in this both diagnosis process and in controlling the symptoms?
So depression serves two roles here. So depression is a disease, but depression is also a symptom. So there are people who have geriatric depression, depression in late life, and those people's memory may be affected by having depression. And if you treat the depression, their memory tends to improve. Depression may also be one of the earliest symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. So in that case, treating the depression doesn't improve memory, but doesn't improve but does improve their mood.
Right.
So there are two parallel paths here, right? So one is depression as a disease, and one is depression as a symptom of another disease. And so what's really critical is, one, is there depression, because that is very treatable. And two is that the driving force behind the memory problem, or is it just part of a collection of other things that are happening?
It's fascinating to me because all of us that travel in the world that we travel in, we see people depressed all the time, and there are lots of reasons. And those reasons, they could be struggling with pain from other ailments. They could have a bad hip or a bad lower back. They could be worried about financial resources. They could have just lost a spouse. It is very important, and you said it. Depression is something not to run away from, but to run towards, because that is the one thing that we can really decide pretty quickly.
And I'm simplifying it here because it's like everything else is much more complicated. But there's reactive depression, and then there's endogenous depression, right? So something bad happens to you and you feel sad about that. That's not what we're really talking about, right? That's you're grieving over the loss of something, whatever that something is, whether it's a person, a job, a thing. But over time, that will resolve itself in almost everybody, right? We're talking about an endogenous problem with neurotransmitters in the brain, right, that is causing someone to have a decline in their mood that will respond to therapeutic approaches, right? So it's a little bit different. But again, that first step is that first medical evaluation because, those are different paths, right? So whether it's a reaction to something, whether it's an endogenous depression by itself as a disease, or whether it's a symptom of another disease, we need to figure that out because, again, our approaches to treating people are going to be different.
So if you're just tuning in, this is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. And as you can tell, I'm here with a very impressive guest. I said this would be a world-class show, and in fact, it is. I'm here with Dr. James Galvin from Florida Atlantic University. We're talking about Alzheimer's disease and other related dementias. We're talking about cause, a difference between Alzheimer's and normal aging. We're going to be moving on to the different kinds of dementias, Lewy body in particular. Can you prevent Alzheimer's disease? Can you cure it? Can you slow the progression down? What about drug treatments? All of the questions that you have, we're going to address tonight. So if you're just tuned in, don't leave because this is a very, very important show. And if you tuned in later, I'm going to tell you how you can catch up at the end of the show. So stay here. We're going to tell you how you can reach Dr. Galvin's office for if you have more information. There's a whole host of conversation yet to come. So, oh my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. 95.9 in the Palm Beaches, 106.9 in the Treasure Coast. If you have questions for Dr. Galvin or for myself, you can reach us at 1-877-960-9960. That's 1-877-960-9960.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys are proud to be a family-owned and operated business.
That's right, Mike. It's myself and my husband, Tino, my sister, Melissa, and her husband, Joe, and my parents, Irene and Scott Greenberg. As you can tell by six family members being able to work together, family is extremely important to us. Our clients often have kids that live out of state or even overseas, and those extended family members want to have the comfort of being able to contact a family member at any time to follow up on how mom or dad is doing. While you are able to reach a family member at any time, our office staff is truly part of our extended family. They monitor the phones 24/7 in case of an emergency and are empowered to make decisions that are in the best interest of the client. Because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines the quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620. Or visit our website at palmbeach.comfortcare.com. That's palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As mom and dad get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared? Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Elder Care 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and education to resolve everyday issues that can impact healthcare challenges and more. As a patient advocate, Elder Care 360 brings together decades of experience as patient-focused professionals to assist you and your families with their routine activities of living and healthcare challenges. Being proactive is the best way to ensure the best possible outcome for you and your family during these times. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800. Make Elder Care 360 part of your team. Elder Care 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Melissa from Comfort Care Senior Services. Melissa, caregiver stress is a real condition and it's becoming an epidemic.
That's right, Mike. Chronic diseases like Parkinson's, MS, Alzheimer's, cancer, among others, affect more than just the person with the diagnosis. They affect the entire family, oftentimes putting added stress on the primary family caregiver. In fact, 64% of family caregivers who do not seek outside help will predecease their loved one living with Alzheimer's disease. Even just a few hours of respite care a week can give someone a much-needed break so that they can be the best caregiver they can be. Whether it's time to schedule a hair appointment, a card game, an exercise class, or lunch with friends. Remember, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm here tonight with a guest that I'm really excited made the effort to get here. He traveled long to be here. Dr. James Galvin, who is a professor of integrated medical science at FAU College of Medicine. He's a board-certified neurologist, and more importantly, he's an expert in Alzheimer's and related diseases. And we've been talking about what Alzheimer's is, the role that depression plays in that. We've had a lot of conversation. But I know this is what everybody wants to know, and so I'm going to ask Dr. Galvin now, can we prevent Alzheimer's disease? Is there anything we can do to prevent it?
So I believe we can, and I believe that's actually where the money is. I think as a disease, it's very difficult to cure diseases. I think we could be much more successful if we prevent the disease from coming. So we know a lot about the risk factors associated with Alzheimer's disease. So the greatest risk factor is age, and that's not, of course, modifiable. The second greatest risk factor is possibly sex. So women are at a slightly higher risk than men. And then family history. So not genetics so much, but a family history of disease. And those are not modifiable. But almost everything else that's a known risk factor for Alzheimer's disease is something that we can have some direct control over. So diabetes is a very strong risk factor for Alzheimer's disease, maybe even stronger as a risk factor than it is for stroke. Strokes, of course, are a risk factor for Alzheimer's disease and related disorders. Hypertension, high cholesterol, obesity, low educational attainment and low cognitive activities, social engagement, hearing loss, smoking, drinking. So all of these things, each contribute in a way to the overall risk of disease. So if you could look at someone and develop sort of a risk profile, and you could look at all of the things that they can take some charge of in their life, you potentially could reduce the risk of Alzheimer's disease by somewhere about 40%. So you can make a huge difference just by sort of changing lifestyle and taking on more positive health behaviors.
Is the effect of all of the things that you mentioned, is it cumulative? Do we have to lead? I saw something today. I hadn't heard the expression in a long time. A chaste life. Do we have to give up everything? Do we do it in moderation?
No, I don't think you have to give up anything. I think you have to think about what is the best behavior that you can do. So the way we do it is we look at four factors. So one, we try to identify risks and do risk reduction, right? So you could think about this as stopping smoking, right? So we know that smoking is a risk factor for a whole host of diseases. So if you were able to stop smoking, that would reduce your risk of disease. We do health promotion. That is, try to encourage you, if you're doing something healthy, to continue to do that and maybe bump it up a little bit. So if you exercise, exercise a little bit more. We do healthful behavioral change. That is, to make the right choice the easy choice. So anybody listening who has a child or a grandchild knows that when they go to get on their bike, you yell at them, put on their helmet. And then for the first 1,000 times you yell that, they get on their bike without their helmet, and you have to tell them to do it. But eventually what you want them to do is, before they get on the bike, they put on the helmet. So that's a healthful behavioral change.
Right.
And then the last is managing their other diseases. So a person whose diabetes is not well controlled is going to have more complications, including a higher risk of Alzheimer's disease. A person who has high blood pressure, who's not managing their blood pressure, is going to have more complications like Alzheimer's disease. So those four things allow us to develop a plan, right? So it's not leading a chaste life and not enjoying life. It's, what can I do to reduce my risk? What can I do to promote health? What kind of behavioral changes can I make that allow me to make the right choices? And how can I manage better the diseases I currently am dealing with? And that combination, I think, is really the approach.
So is there a way to predict your likelihood I'm thinking of the BRCA1 gene, right? We know that is an early, genetic warning sign. And we're not talking about genetics here. I understand that. But is there a way to be predictive, or is this good advice for everybody because anybody can come down with the disease?
Well, the answer is yes.
Okay.
Right? So I think this is good advice that everybody could follow. These are things, as a physician, we've been telling our patients forever, right?
Right.
Stay mentally active, physically fit, eat a healthy diet, stay socially engaged. These are just smart things to do. But I think when you look at a person as an individual, not a person as part of a larger group, but looking at a person as an individual, you can identify things that individual is doing that you can make some changes.
Right.
Right. And I think that's a smart way to approach it.
Well, that's interesting. Family history. You mentioned family history. I get asked this all the time. This is not hereditary in the truest sense of hereditary, but family history plays an important role, right? Can we explain that?
Sure. So Alzheimer's and all of the related disorders generally are not genetic diseases, right? They can't be explained by genes. Only about 2% of cases can be explained by a gene, right? And that tends to be early onset. So people develop it in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. And every generation, you can identify people who developed it in their 30s, 40s, or 50s. So great-granddad, grandmom, dad, five uncles, four cousins, all at the same age. So within a family, you tends to be right around a cluster of the same age. That's genetic, right? That's due to an abnormality or gene mutation. That's less than 2% of cases. The rest of the disease is what we call sporadic, means it occurs randomly in the population, with age being the single greatest risk factor. That said, if your parents have any disease, if they have osteoarthritis or Alzheimer's or diabetes, you share their gene pool and all of their learned behaviors, both the good ones and the bad ones. And so that increases the likelihood that you can have some of the same diseases as they do. So there are genes that are risk genes, which means that, you know, it increases your risk over the general population, but they don't cause disease. And there are genes that are protective, again, reducing your risk compared to the general population, but they don't absolutely prevent you from getting the disease. So family history is important because if you have a family that's long lived, right, and so everybody lives into their 90s, statistically about half of them will develop Alzheimer's disease. That's not genetics in the classic sense.
Right, right. Makes perfect sense. If you're just tuning in, this is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. Here tonight with Dr. James Galvin. Dr. Galvin is the professor of integrated medical science at Florida Atlantic College, Florida Atlantic University's College of Medicine. He's a board-certified neurologist. He's an expert in Alzheimer's and dementia. We have so much more to ask Dr. Galvin. But if you have questions for him, you can call us, 877-960-9960. That's 877-960-9960.
I'm here with Tino from Comfort Care Senior Services. Tino, you train all of your caregivers on how to deal with those who are struggling with Alzheimer's disease, right?
I do, Mike. This disease process is frightening for everyone, and change is the scariest thing for most people. Where we should start is changing the way we think. People are not dying from Alzheimer's disease. They are living with it, and we have to figure out a way for them to keep on living their best life possible. I always say activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities is what gives people a life worth living. Properly training caregivers on all sorts of dementia is very important. Learning about behavior modification techniques, avoiding triggers, tapping into the abilities that are preserved the longest with people with dementia, and figuring out what's important to them are all vital tools caregivers need to understand. Remember, it's about the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620 or visit us on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys really look at every client differently.
Activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities give people a life worth living. That's why at Comfort Care, we complete a social history for our clients. It taps into one's life story to help caregivers know more about who this person was and, quite frankly, still is. It asks questions like, what did you do for a living? What volunteer work did you do? What was your favorite book or movie? Were you in the military? And the list goes on. Understanding background like this is helpful in creating meaningful activities. For example, if someone was a cartographer in the Army, perhaps a trip to the library to look at old maps of where they were stationed might be an interesting activity. If someone were an avid golfer, perhaps a makeshift putting green might be a fun outing. We couple that with a day in the life, which asks more of the daily routine questions, so a caregiver coming in is already familiar with the schedule. It makes the adjustment to having a caregiver that much easier. Caregivers want to help their clients live their best life possible. Being armed with the right information can help, because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines your quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm here tonight with Dr. James Galvin. Dr. Galvin is clearly an expert on Alzheimer's and related dementia. We've been talking about a whole host of topics. In the time we have left, we have a whole host more to go through. If you have questions for Dr. Galvin, you can call us at 877-960-9960. Dr. Galvin, prior to the break, we talked about prevention, and I know you feel strongly that we can impact our risk factors dramatically. But let's move it over. We've now been diagnosed or we're experiencing something. Can we slow the progression by incorporating some of the things that you were talking about, or should we be doing something else?
So we can, there's some evidence that we can try to slow the progression of symptoms. And so many of the things that we talked about for preventing the disease may also play a role in slowing down or symptomatic benefits. So if you look at people, for example, who eat a Mediterranean-style diet, right? So it's high in whole grains, fresh fruits and vegetables, low in saturated fats, use olive oil, little red wine. It may reduce the risk of developing disease, but it also tends to slow down the progression of symptoms of people who already have disease. That's true for exercise. That's true for social engagement, for cognitive stimulation. So all of these things can have a role in slowing down the symptoms and reducing the impact of the disease on people. Now, it doesn't reverse the disease. It just slows down the symptoms of disease. Similarly, the medicines that are currently available, and there are four approved medicines in the United States, they help slow down the progression of symptoms, but not the disease itself.
Right.
So the disease will march on, and if you stop taking the medicine, you will decline and meet that line where you would have been if you were never treated. But the people who are treated tend to have a slower symptom progression than the people who don't. So we can't reverse it, but we can effectively slow down and treat the symptoms.
I have about 17 questions that came out of that. Talking about progression, we said Alzheimer's disease may be the Ford or the Chevy of the car, you know, of dementia, but there are lots of other cars. Does the progression vary from related dementia that is not Alzheimer's disease? So I know, for example, Lewy body is a subject that you spend a great deal of time with. Does that progress differently, fast? Does all Alzheimer's progress the same way? How do we talk about progression of this disease?
If you've seen one case, you've seen one case. So everybody's unique and different. When we talk about rates of progression, which I actually don't talk about in a clinical sense, for the research, yes, but in a clinical sense, I never talk about rates of progression because you can't predict because each person's different. But in general, if you look at some diseases, they progress much faster and other diseases progress much slower. So, for example, there's a very rare cause of dementia called Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is the human version of mad cow disease. And that from start to finish is as short as 4 months. Whereas, in Alzheimer's disease, it can have a more malignant process where it can be quick. But for the most part, you're looking at a 15 to 20 year total picture. So it varies from individual to individual. You know, the healthier someone is, the better they do. The more resources and support they have, the better they do. And the older they are, the better they do. So if you tend to get it, if you get it at an earlier age, it tends to be a little bit more aggressive than if you got it, you know, in your 90s. But you also have more to lose at 50 than you do at 90 because you've eliminated a lot of activities at age 90 that you're not doing anymore. So you're still working at 50. You're probably not working at 90. So the loss of your job is a much bigger impact than it would be at age 90 when you're not working for the most part anymore. So it varies from person to person. So it's really hard to say, you know, looking at a person say, well, you're going to live for 5 years and you're going to live for 7 years. It's very hard to do that.
Right. And people always want to know what's coming next, and it's almost impossible to predict what's coming next, right? It's a progressive disease, but as you said, you've met one person.
Well, if they come to me in the morning, I can tell them for sure that lunch is coming next, right?
Well, that's true.
So there are some things I can tell them, but in general, I try not to have those discussions. So, you know, the way we practice is, you know, the name of our center is the Comprehensive Center for Brain Health. So we don't talk about disease other than that first visit where I have to establish a diagnosis. The rest of the visits are really focusing on your health. Right. We spend way too much time talking about disease and disability and death, and we spend way too little time talking about health and capabilities and vitality. Right. And so we really spend a lot of time sort of changing the topic of conversation. Again, our approach is to make you the best you that you can be by looking at everything there is about you and changing the things that we can change.
One of my favorite expressions is people aren't dying of Alzheimer's, they're living with Alzheimer's. And how do we give them the best life possible, which is exactly what you're talking about. I'm fascinated by so much of what you just said. That I don't kind of really know where to go next, so I'm going to take a break and gather myself. As if you're just tuning in, it's Scott Greenberg. Oh my God, I'm getting older, so is my mom. I'm here tonight with Dr. James Galvin. Dr. Galvin is a professor of integrative medical science at the Charles Schmidt College of Medicine at Florida Atlantic University. He is a board-certified neurologist. He's incredibly well published, and he obviously knows a lot about Alzheimer's and related dementias. We're going to talk about, he mentioned four drugs in just a few minutes ago. We're going to talk about the existing state of treatment in terms of drugs, and we're going to talk about the latest developments and where we're going from here. I hope that if you have any questions for Dr. Galvin or for myself, you will call us. Also get a pen, because we're going to tell you how you can reach his center for more information in just a little bit. But in the meantime, if you have any questions for Dr. Galvin or for myself, you can call us at 877-960-9960. That's 877-960-9960.
I'm here with Melissa from Comfort Care Senior Services. Melissa, at Comfort Care, you're an agency, not a nurse registry, right?
Yes, Mike. When looking at home care in South Florida, there are two types of companies, and on the front, we look very much the same. We're an agency, which means all of our caregivers are our employees. They are licensed, bonded, and insured. We pay the professional liability insurance, we pay the workers' comp insurance, the overtime, and we pay the employment taxes. In other words, we are the true employer. When working with a nurse registry, the client is the employer, and that matters. Another big difference is the ability to train. Agencies are allowed to train, and we do. We conduct both field training and in-home training. A nurse registry's caregivers are deemed experts in their field and therefore are not allowed to be trained by the registry over and above what the state requires. We also have a very rigorous hiring process. The caregiver pool in South Florida is huge, and we strive to hire the top 20%. We do that in a few ways, including testing, interviews, background checks over and above what the state requires, and passing the family test. Remember, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As mom and dad get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared? Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Elder Care 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and education to resolve everyday issues that can impact health care challenges and more. As a patient advocate, Elder Care 360 brings together decades of experience as patient-focused professionals to assist you and your families with their routine activities of living and healthcare challenges. Being proactive is the best way to ensure the best possible outcome for you and your family during these times. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800. Make Elder Care 360 part of your team. Elder Care 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Scott Greenberg from Comfort Care Senior Services. Scott, you're very involved when it comes to the senior community.
That's right, Mike. We firmly believe that involvement in the community, giving back to the community, comes back to us in many, many ways. One of the ways it comes back to us is in our understanding of what's going on, what's new, what's trending. So we're very involved in the guardianship community, for example. We're involved in Alzheimer's community care, in the Alzheimer's Association, in Parkinson's. We run support groups. Basically, what I'm saying is that we want to be a part of the community in ways that we just don't receive benefit, but that we can give benefit as well. It's very important for us to understand the needs of the entire community and the needs of other people who are providing services. It is only through that that we can ensure that we provide the best care possible. Remember, Mike, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines the quality of their life. So remember, let our family take care of your family and call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or look us up on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. We have a great show tonight. I'm here with Dr. James Galvin. Dr. Galvin is with FAU's College of Medicine. He is a board-certified neurologist. He is, more importantly, however, a specialist on Alzheimer's and related dementias or related diseases. We've been talking about a whole host of things that are important to you. a lot of people out there, since one out of two people over the age of 85 will have some level of cognitive impairment, one out of three over 65 will develop it. A lot of us are dealing with either family members with the disease, or we know somebody who is, and we're living with that each and every day. One of the things that most people want to know about is treatment. Are there any cures? Is there anything currently that will cure the disease? And then what does the future look like, especially given the announcement last week of a new FDA submission by a company called Biogen? And we're going to talk to Dr. Galvin about those things. So, Dr. Galvin, can we talk about the current state of pharmaceutical treatment and then what the future looks like?
Sure. There are four medicines that are currently available in the United States to treat Alzheimer's disease. Three of them are from the same family, their names are donepezil, rivastigmine, and galantamine. People may know them by their brand names, which would be Aricept, Exelon, and Razadyne. And so they're cousins of each other. They act on a system called the acetylcholine system to try to keep that chemical in the brain for a little bit longer. And then there's another medicine called memantine, which used to be branded under the name Namenda, and that works on the glutamate system. So two different brain chemicals the drugs work on, and they're symptomatic treatments. So they work at slowing down the progression of symptoms, but they don't treat the underlying disease process. We don't have anything available currently that's able to treat the underlying disease process.
And before we move on to the new drug, I think most, you said it before, but I think it bears repeating, is that it will possibly, not all the time, possibly slow the progression or slow down the symptoms, whereas if you didn't take it, you're going to end up in the same place. You're just going to end up in the same place a little bit later, I guess. Is that being said correctly?
Right. So the idea is that if we can slow down the symptoms, you can have a better quality of life. So the medicines typically are effective. Their effect is a small effect, but a measurable effect nonetheless. And if you look at people who are treated versus people who are not treated, the people who are treated will do better. But you have to know what you're looking for, and you have to know what the medicines don't do. And what the medicines don't do is reverse the problem. So, you know, I see families and they say, "Doc, we've been taking the medicine for 6 months and I don't see anything." And I say, "Great, it's working."
Right.
Because the expectation, if I did nothing, you would be worse. And so if you haven't changed, then the medicines are effective. But that's a very hard concept because people are used to things like blood pressure medicines, where if you take the blood pressure medicine, you can see your blood pressure go down. It's very hard to measure memory. So it's more difficult to measure its outcome, except, you know, when you take a lot of time and effort to do so. So it makes it much more difficult. But the medicines are effective. You just have to know what they can and can't do and set realistic treatment expectations.
A week or so ago, Biogen, a big pharmaceutical company, announced that they were going to submit a new drug application to the FDA for a drug that whose clinical trial they just pulled a few months ago, and they've found new evidence of its efficacy, and so they're submitting the application. That is different in that has some promise to be curative or impact symptoms.
So it's a disease-modifying medicine. So it's an antibody. So it acts on the amyloid protein, which is depositing in the brain of people with Alzheimer's disease, to help remove it. I don't like the word cure.
Right.
The reason I don't like cure is because, well, everybody's on the radio in a little secret. Doctors, for the most part, don't cure diseases. It's almost impossible to cure a disease, right? We can treat diseases, but it's very difficult to cure a disease. Surgeons can cure diseases. Medical doctors, for the most part, treat diseases. So sometimes we get lucky, we can give an antibiotic, or sometimes we can cure cancer. But for the most part, we treat it. No one's ever cured of their arthritis or of their high cholesterol, of their heart disease, of their diabetes, of their gout.
Interesting.
We treat it.
Right.
So Alzheimer's is no different. We can treat it. What we've lacked are more effective medications to treat. So this antibody There were two clinical trials going. They had names, Engage and Emerge. That was the names of the studies. And it was a pre-planned analysis, means when they designed the study, they had a plan that they would take a peekaboo look at the data,
right,
and do something called a futility analysis. That means, is continuing the study futile, that it won't reach its outcome? So they looked at all of the pooled data together, and what they determined was it wasn't going to reach its outcome. This was very discouraging for everybody because the last medicine that was approved in 2003, and there have been over 150 clinical trials that have failed since then, right? This past week, what they did was they released a press release. So we haven't seen the data yet, but there was the press release. And what they did was they looked at the Emerge study, which had a higher dose. And when they looked at just that high dose in the Emerge study, it actually did meet its outcomes. And when they looked at the Engage study, which had several different doses, those people who were in the highest dose had the same response as the people in Emerge, even though they didn't necessarily reach statistical significance. So when you lumped everything together, just looking at that highest dose, it looks like it works. So after, from the press release, after discussions with the FDA and going through what, I guess, what the FDA would take as evidence, they decided to go forward and submit an application for a new drug approval. Now, that's up to the FDA as to whether they approve it, and that's going to take a while. But if that happened, that would be a huge step because, again, for the most part, it's been very difficult to actually change the disease process itself, either due to side effects or lack of effectiveness.
And they are talking about, in that drug trial, as I understand it, in reversing some of the symptoms and restoring some cognition where
well, reversing the pathology.
Okay.
Right. And if you reverse the pathology, you can halt the symptom progression. So right. It should stop. But you will still have a symptom.
Right.
And that will make a symptomatic medicine much, much more effective.
Right.
Right. So the problem with the symptomatic medicine is if it's a moving train, you're always chasing the moving train. But if you can stop the train from moving, you can be much more effective at treating the symptoms of that disease. So that it'll probably be a combination approach, but this is very exciting because to date we've not had anything like this that worked.
Right.
Now we do have medicines that are disease modifying in other diseases like rheumatoid arthritis and multiple sclerosis, and that has changed the game for those diseases.
Right.
And you can see all the commercials on television for all the different antibodies. Anything that ends in AB, that's a drug, is an antibody. They're all over the place because they're very effective. If they're safe and effective. And so we've been waiting for that. So this may be that. We'll just have to wait to see.
So if you have been listening for just a few minutes and you're sorry that you didn't tune in earlier, I have good news for you because you can recover this whole show by just going to your podcast platform tomorrow and searching OMG, I'm Getting. Tomorrow around noontime, it should be up on all of the platforms. OMG, I'm Getting, and you can listen to Dr. Galvin right from the beginning if you're sorry that you missed him because you just tuned in late. We also, for those who are not podcasters, and I understand that because I'm not, but if you're not, I put it up on my website because everybody goes to the web, don't they? We put it up on palmbeach.comforcare.com, comforcare.com. Don't put a T in there as hard as you want to. Don't do that. But palmbeach.comforcare, it'll be up there around the same time. Of course, if you'd like to listen to us more regularly, but you don't have a radio where you typically are Mondays at 9 o'clock, or, sorry, at 6 o'clock, the good news is that you probably have a smartphone, and there's an app that would allow you to listen to this. TuneIn Radio, one word. Free app, download on any platform, and you can set your reminder to listen to us 6 o'clock every Monday on WSVU. Those are our call letters. And, of course, we do simulcast wherever you are, on TrueOldiesFLA.com. TrueOldiesFLA.com. Next week, we're going to talk about Honor Flight. For those who don't know anything about Honor Flight, that is a program that takes veterans from World War II and now from the Korean War and Vietnam War to Washington, D.C. They are escorted by a volunteer who will take them to their memorial of choice, depending upon what war they were in. Last year, they took over 300 people from the Southeast region. Already this year, they're close to that number. We're going to have a veteran here. We're going to have somebody from the Honor Flight program. It's an amazing program. It's a wonderful program. All veterans deserve this. Free to them. And the volunteers help pay for it. It's a wonderful, wonderful program. I encourage you to listen. In 2 weeks, Tiffany DePani, I hope I'm pronouncing that properly, Tiffany will be here. Tiffany DePani will be here. And she's going to explain how to become a socially savvy senior. There is so much technology out there today that it's really hard for us to figure out how to use it. And if you're a technological moron like I may be, and your 14-year-old grandson isn't at your side all the time, Tiffany's going to give you the tools you need to get the most out of the technology that is available to you. I want to remind everybody that Wednesday morning at the Movies of Del Rey, in Del Rey, that's why they're called the Movies of Del Rey, there will be a free showing of When All That's Left Is Love, a movie about a family going through the end stages of Alzheimer's with one of their loved ones. It's a wonderful movie. Dr. Galvin, my guest tonight, is going to be there, as will I. There'll be other people as well. I encourage you to come. It's free. It starts at 9 o'clock, the movie at 10:15. There'll be discussion after that. I look forward to seeing you there. In the few minutes I have left, though, Dr. Galvin, if people want more information about your program and your center, how do they get that?
So you can call us, area code 561-297-0164. That's the Comprehensive Center for Brain Health. You can Google us at the Comprehensive Center for Brain Health, and you can get our website and a whole bunch of other information. Or you can email us at healthybrain@health.fau.edu. That's healthybrain@health.fau.edu, and someone will get back to you.
We don't have enough time to go over near everything I want to talk to you about. We really don't, and this has been so interesting to me. It really has been. You do a lot of research with NIH. I've always been of the opinion, maybe incorrectly so, that we're not spending enough on research. But your work with NIH is really critical, and they are funding some research. Can we give a brief synopsis of what they're doing?
Sure. NIH is the largest funder of biomedical research in the world. And the Chinese government being the second largest funder. So our projects focus largely around trying to improve the recognition, diagnosis, and treatment of Alzheimer's and related disorders. So we have NIH-funded projects that look at improving the home health care agency setting, improving hospital outcomes, to recognizing disease in rural Florida to try to identify vascular risk factors that increase the risk of disease in rural Florida, and looking at how the disease presents itself across different races and ethnicities. We have studies that look at testing new drugs, and we have studies that look at prevention of disease. So we do a full gamut of studies, all supported by NIH and some other private foundations.
So we really are, and your center is really kind of cutting edge on what's coming down the road. One of the things I would have, if we had time, asked you about was the technology and how technology is changing both the discovery process that you're talking about through the National Institute of Health and in the care. But unfortunately, we don't so have enough time. But you are an incredible guest, and I hope, even though it's a trip, I could twist your arm to come back someday, and we could talk about all the things that we didn't get to talk about tonight. I can't thank you enough for making the trip up here. I can't thank you enough for all that you do for those who are dealing with Alzheimer's and related dementias. All of the things that you're doing are very exciting. They're very much needed in the community. And I thank you, and I thank you for being a guest tonight. Dr. James Galvin has been here, and he is a professor at Charles E. Schmidt College of Medicine, Florida Atlantic University, a board-certified neurologist specializing in Alzheimer's and related diseases. If you tuned in late, it's a shame, but again, you can listen by going to podcast OMG I'm Getting, and it will be there tomorrow. Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom is here every Monday night. We begin at 6 o'clock. We talk about issues that confront boomers and their parents. We're on 95.9 in the Palm Beaches, 106.9 on the Treasure Coast. We hope that you will join us and come back next week. Don't forget the movie, When All That's Left Is Love, at the Movies of Del Rey on Wednesday. Next week, Honor Flight. Don't miss that. Thank you all. Have a good night. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. Good night, all.